The Australian Years, 1891 to 1900, Volume 4, Chapter 4. 1892, The Australasian Bible School. One of the reasons why the General Conference asked Ellen White and her son to go to Australia was the need there for a school to train the youth in their homeland. The principal item of business at the Australian Conference session that was held immediately after their arrival in Melbourne was the establishment of such a school. Provision was made for a committee on location, to which members representing Australia and New Zealand were named. The next step was the securing of support from the believers in New Zealand, a conference with a membership about two-thirds that of Australia. This was accomplished at the session of the New Zealand Conference held in Napier, April 1 to 14, 1892. Now it was time to move forward with the development of plans and to devise means of financial support. In the General Conference action recommending the school be established, taken in March 1891, the matter of finances was left to the Australian field. The actions taken at the two conference sessions made no provision for supplying money for the project. Australia was moving into an economic depression. Not all believers saw the need of a school, nonetheless, they took the first steps in deciding where the school should be located. Some argued for Sydney, others for Melbourne. Ellen White favored the latter. Work had to begin in rented buildings. As the choice of a location narrowed down to Melbourne, it seemed that the area known as North Fitzroy, about 2 miles from the publishing house, would serve best. There they found a complex consisting of four buildings, two of which were available, and the rent was within reason. On either side of the buildings was open land, Letter 13, 1892. The Bible Echo of August 1 carried the announcement of plans for the opening of the school. The arrival of L.A. J. Russo, an educator from the United States, in late July gave assurance that the school could be opened soon. In the Echo report, readers were informed of the attractive situation of the school. The situation is nearly all that could be desired, on one of the city's most attractive boulevards, and yet enjoying abundance of open space on every side. In connection with the buildings is a nice grass paddock, while across the street are the broad acres and Lake of Albert Park. The place is easy of access from train or boat, and is well known. There is good accommodation in the buildings both for home and school. The houses rented were so closely connected as to form one house of 23 rooms. One large room, about 18 by 35 feet, would serve for chapel exercises and Bible classroom. There were other quite large rooms that would be used in the schoolwork, the Review and Herald, September 15, 1892. The Bible school opens at 10:30 on Wednesday, August 24. Opening exercises were held. I.G. Daniels and G.C. Tenney spoke first, then Mrs. White, who had to be carried onto the platform. She seemed to lose sight of the small constituency, of the adverse financial conditions, and the mere handful of students. With a vision of an unfinished task in a world with many continents yet untouched by the third angel's message, she declared, "The missionary work in Australia and New Zealand is yet in its infancy, but the same work must be accomplished in Australia, New Zealand, in Africa, India, China, and the islands of the sea, as has been accomplished in the home field Ibid, Supplement, September 1, 1892, quoted in Life Sketches of Ellen G. White, 338. W.C. White followed with a review of the development of school work among Seventh-day Adventists and set forth some of the conditions of success and some of the elements of danger. L.J. Rousseau, the principal, expressed his appreciation of the cordial reception given to him and his wife. He would teach some of the classes. The other teachers were announced as G.B. Astar, Biblical History and Ethics, and W.L. H. Baker and Mrs. Rousseau in the other areas. Mrs. Starr was the matron, the Review and Herald, September 15, 1892. 25 students enrolled, more than anticipated. What made the school possible, what was not made generally public, was how, in the face of adverse financial circumstances and the indifference on the part of a good many, the school actually got underway. Ellen White was to refer to it some months later. In a letter to Harmon Lindsay, the treasurer of the General Conference, she said, "Last winter, when we saw that we must have a school to meet the demands of the cause, we were put to our wits' ends to know where we should obtain the funds." Ellen G. White tells of expenses. "Some thought it could not be done, yet we knew that it must be started in 1892. Some thought all that could be done was to hold a short institute for the ministers. We knew that there were many youth who needed the advantages of the school. While we were in such deep perplexity as to how we should be able to make a beginning, the same plan was suggested to Willie's mind that was suggested to mine, and that, on the same night. In the morning when he came to tell me his plan, I asked him to wait until I told him mine, which was that we used the royalty of the foreign books sold in America. Although in pain, my mind was exercised over this matter, and I prayed earnestly to the Lord for light, and it came. You know that I could not well use the money that is set apart for other purposes. Of the royalty above referred to, I invested $1,000 to be used when most needed. But $500 must be used as a fund to bring to the school students who cannot and will not come unless they have help. Willie said that, with this statement to place before the board, we shall have their influence to sustain us. Thus our school was begun. Letter 79, 1893. As she wrote to another of this, she explained, they, the students, would never have been able to enjoy the advantages of the school unless someone did help them, and as no one assumed the responsibility, it dropped on me. I carried several through the first term of school, and am paying the expenses of 6 during the present term, and the number may swell to 8. Letter 65, 1893. A month after the school opened, she could report joyfully, the school is certainly doing well. The students are the very best. They are quiet, and are trying to get all the good possible. They all like Elder Rousseau and his wife as teachers. He does not show what there is in him, and there is chance for all to be disappointed by his unpretending ways, but when engaged in his work, he shows he has a store of knowledge and is apt to teach. It is so pleasant to see all the students well pleased. This is indeed a harmonious house, no jealousies, no jangling. It is refreshing. Letter 54, 1892. 3 months later she could write to Elder Olson. The faculty have made few rules, and have not had one case where discipline was required. Peace and harmony have reigned from first to last. The presence of Jesus has been in the school from its beginning, and the Lord has wrought upon the minds of teachers and pupils. Without an exception, all the pupils have responded to the efforts made in their behalf, advancing step by step and obtaining knowledge, by doing their best. Letter 46, 1892. Confronted with the cold of midwinter, the home in Preston that the staff in midsummer had found so convenient was difficult to heat. Neither the wood they purchased by the hundredweight nor the coke they endeavored to use could raise the temperature in the high-ceilinged rooms to a point of comfort. It was decided to move when the six-month lease expired. Adelaide, in South Australia, offered a more comfortable climate. But no satisfactory place could be found in Adelaide, popular for its winter climate, and the proposed move was delayed. She told Daniels, come what may, we must not for a moment lose courage or hope or faith, because that would give the victory to the enemy. Whatever circumstances may arise, we must remember that the captain of the Lord's host is leading us. Manuscript 33, 1892. The tide begins to turn. Beginning with July 10th, the entries in Ellen White's diary began to take a new turn. On that day she could write the words, I praise the Lord with heart and soul and voice that I am growing stronger. Manuscript 34, 1892. Restoration was slow, so slow, but from time to time the entries were brighter. On September 5th she wrote Elder Haskell, I am very happy to report that I am much improved in health. In this country we see much to be done. I am anxious to think that it is safe for me to enter upon active labor. Elder Daniels is now in Adelaide. He is much worn, and it is a question whether he should undertake to labor for the church there alone. As the Lord seems to be greatly favoring me with blessings both physical and spiritual, W.C. White and I have decided to go to Adelaide. Emily Campbell and May Walling will accompany us. We are to break up housekeeping, thus saving the rent. Letter 30, 1892. 2 months in Adelaide, the Adelaide Church, with a membership of more than 100, was second in size only to the Melbourne Church. Early in the plans for Australia, Ellen White was to visit Adelaide. The pastor, W.D. Curtis, now returned to the homeland, had engaged in preaching, but neglected personal visiting, and the church was suffering. Just as soon as living quarters could be found, Ellen White was determined to take her helpers with her to join Daniels in his revival meetings and spend 2 or 3 months there. Daniels at last found a neat little furnished cottage of 6 rooms that would cost Ellen White only $25 a month, and sent for her. The group made the trip overnight and settled in on Monday, September 26. She was pleased with the climate, and found she was in a beautiful city that reminded her much of Copenhagen, Denmark. Manuscript 37, 1892. The church generously furnished a horse and carriage, Ellen White paying for the care of the horse. She divided her working time between preaching, visiting the church members, and writing. Some of the visiting, because of the neglect of the pastor, was very taxing. Gradually her health improved, and on October 5th she reported that she felt more natural than she had felt during her sickness. Letter 72, 1892. And the time came when on 3 consecutive mornings she could write. November 6th, 1892, I praise my Heavenly Father for a better night's rest than usual. November 7th, 1892, I rested well through the night. November 8th, 1892, I slept well through the night. Manuscript 38, 1892. Nearly every day she rode out in the carriage. One Friday she and her companion took their lunch and drove into the hills, where the scenery reminded her of Colorado. Everything was a living green. At noon they ate their lunch under a large tree, then turned homeward to prepare for the Sabbath, Manuscript 37, 1892. 2 weeks at Ballarat. Ellen White had her eyes on the closing of the Bible school in Melbourne in mid-December, to be followed by the Australian conference session in early January. With their work completed in Adelaide, there was just time to squeeze in a 2-week visit at Ballarat en route to Melbourne. She and her women helpers stayed at the home of a church member whose family name was James. It was about a mile out of town, surrounded by fruit trees and abounding with beautiful flowers. On December 12, they returned to Melbourne. Although it was early summer, the weather was cloudy and cold, but the outlook for Ellen White was brighter than it had been for the better part of a year.